Conscient Podcast, episode 175. Sound artist, producer, educator, curator, and festival director, Sabina Breitsemeter.
Listening can teach us to appreciate our environment in a critical sense, but also in a kind of admiration for it. And if we admire something because we think it has a depth or it has a beauty or some interesting aspects, we want to keep it, we want to foster it.
I first met Sabina at the Tuning of the World Conference in Banff, Alberta, in 1993. Sabina's work focuses on media art, listening culture, cultures of perception, experimental audio media, media history, media ecology, acoustic ecology, as well as trance and intercultural studies. Sabina has worked as an experimental audio media maker, working as director, author, curator, and dramaturge for the cultural departments of the German Public Radio, and was co-founder of the master's program Sound Studies at the University of the Arts in Berlin. She also worked there as a professor for experimental audio media from 2004 to 2008. Since 2006, she teaches and researches as a professor for sound and media culture at the Darmstadt University of Applied Sciences in Germany, where she is also director of the Soundscape and Environmental Media Lab and 3D Audio Lab. As a scientist and artistic director, she has curated numerous art projects, symposia, and festivals. I was a guest speaker at one of these events in 2018, the Global Composition in Dieburg, Germany, where I was invited to speak about the origins of the World Forum for Acoustic Ecology. While on a trip to Canada in May 2024, Sabina stopped by Ottawa, and we talked about her work, and she shared some thoughts about art and the ecological crisis with a focus on listening and sound studies. As I listened to Sabina, one of her observations struck a chord with me. She talked about how artists are always careful with what they do. And she defines it as:
aesthetics of care is a consciously shaped relationship with the world in a mindful attitude and with high appreciation for the phenomena of this world and its values.
I was also impressed by the parallel she drew between the polycrisis of today and Friedrich Schiller's On the Aesthetic Education of Man, written in 1795, which addresses the dehumanization and alienation of industrial labor through aesthetic education and the arts. And this was of particular interest to me because my father's ancestors emigrated from Germany right around that time in the early 1800s. At the end of our conversation, Sabina gave me a copy of the second edition of Die Ordnung der Klänge, The Ordering of Sounds, her German translation of R. Murray Schafer's The Tuning of the World. Hey, Sabina. Welcome to Conscient Podcast.
Yeah, hello, Claude.
Now, we've known each other for a while. I remember, I think the first time was 1996. We were both in a residence at Simon Fraser University creating soundscape compositions. And I met you again in 2018. You did a conference in Duisburg, Germany. And now you're in my home. And so it's so nice to have you here in person to talk about your work in acoustic ecology. You'll introduce yourself in a minute. But you've always been an important presence in my life because you're like me in the sense of very curious about listening, and you do a lot of research, and you're very generous also when you invite people to conferences and you make things happen. So I really appreciate that as an organizer and as somebody who's very active in the community. So why don't you just introduce yourselves to our listeners, or, you know, where are you from, what do you do kind of thing?
Yes, I'm from Germany. I live in Berlin. I'm a professor at Darmstadt University of Applied Sciences. I have a previous life in media, in audio media. I had been an experimental radio and electroacoustic art forms dramaturg, author, and director for the first half of my professional life. Then I was slowly going into the direction of academics without me noticing it. And at some point, I got a phone call. Do you want to set up a master's program at the University of the Arts in Berlin called Sound Studies? And that made me curious, and I said yes. And I became a guest professor there. And later on, since 2006, I became a professor in Darmstadt. So then finally, I ended up in academics, yeah, but not in too much academics, because I believe very much in 50% practice, 50% theory, and I really mean it. And I think this is also a kind of pattern or a kind of concept which the Bauhaus movement also had, and I think that makes a lot of sense.
And thank you, by the way, for speaking in English. I know it's not your first language, so I appreciate that. And how would you define your work or your research? What are you interested in? What are the because people don't necessarily know. We use the term acoustic ecology, but it's very broad. What within that interests you?
Yes, first of all, I'm interested in listening. I'm interested in auditory art forms, in auditory expression, in the world of listening, the world of hearing, the world of the auditory. Why that? Because I think the world of the auditory is a different world than the visual world. In the visual world, we have forms and we have clear borders of things. We can see them exactly. But in the world of sound, things get blurred. They don't have so clear contours anymore. And they are very, very dynamic. They don't stay the same at all. They change very, very quickly. And I think if we build up our world on our auditory impressions, it can become a very interesting world, and we can become aware of new aspects of our phenomena which surround us. And this fascinates me very, very much. Just think of you listening to somebody's voice, and you create an image of yourself, or an impression, maybe that's the better word to use. You create an impression of this person in your mind, how this person is like, and then finally you see this person, and there is maybe these are two different worlds. And I think that's quite an interesting thing, because it tells us about different aspects of a person. Or another example, I remember when we were in band for the World Forum for Acoustic Ecology in 93, I think it was, in band for wonderful mountains and beautiful landscapes. And then these fighter planes came in very, very close over our heads and were gone within seconds, but they created such a terrible noise, and the whole image of the beautiful mountains, of the postcard idyllic scenery was suddenly becoming something very different. And so the sound revealed something very interesting to us, which an image at this point could not reveal anymore. So this fascinates me very, very much. And that is one reason why I'm interested in sound.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that, 1993, it was a conference at the Banff Center for the Arts called Tuning of the World, which is the same book that Murray Schafer wrote in the 70s in Vancouver. And you're going to Vancouver this week to talk about with some of our colleagues at Simon Fraser University. And you gave me a book in German about Schafer. So what is your connection with Murray Schafer, and what kind of research have you done about his work?
Yes. So first of all, this is a translation of Schafer into German. Mm. One day, Murray Schafer approached me. I think this must have been in 2002 or something. And he said, "Can you translate my book into German?" Then I said, "There is already a translation." He said, "No, that's not an authorized translation, and it's very bad." So I agreed with that because it was leaving things out, it was not consistent in terminology and things like that. So I thought of it, and in 2008 I met him again. We were talking about this. I was getting support by the Canadian Embassy in Germany, and they and we managed to get a publishing house interested, which is Schott Music in Mainz, a German, very, very important music publishing house. So in 2010, we had the first edition out with an introductory essay of mine and with a completely new translation. And this translation is interesting because you will not find one word which is similar to the very first one, which was done without the consent and without any agreements made with Murray Schafer. Because people say, "Oh, why a second try?" I said, "Because it's completely different. You will find no word in the same way." And it's really true. Yeah, so then it came out, and at this point it was important to point out what is acoustic ecology, what exactly is soundscape, because we could really see everywhere that there is a very, very generic use, there was a very generic use of the term soundscape coming up. So I thought it would be important to remind people what this exactly is, where it comes from, where it relates to, where it aligns with, that there is influence of for example, Marshall McLuhan and people like that. So this was the reason why I did this first edition. And then now, after some years, after Murray Schafer had died in 2021, the publishing house and I, we sat together, and we decided we have to do another new edition, not a new translation. The translation is the same. I just adapted some typos, and maybe the one or the other I corrected a little bit. But then I did a new introduction, a new introductory essay. And this introductory essay is dealing mainly with aspects of Murray Schafer which had been very much misunderstood, because people had not been really reading his work or had not attempted to look into it in a very careful way. For example, there is one thing I feel we should do much more. What sort of text is that, what we're dealing with? Many people deal with Murray Schafer's book in a way as if it is, which it is not, of course, a scientific writing, but of course it isn't. Murray Schafer wrote this book because he was an artist educator. And he wrote his book not as a scientific, you know, proof and argumentation-based thing, but he wrote it because it was a kind of programmatic thing he wanted to get over. He wanted to get across, yeah? And I think we have to look it from this way, because otherwise we don't do this book justice. Because I had been to so many conferences where Murray Schafer was, "Oh, well, this is not true, and this is not scientific, and this argumentation of Murray Schafer doesn't fit scientific standards," and things like that. But that's not the point. He never wanted to be a scientist. He always wanted to be an artist and an educator, and he was an artist and an educator. Now we have to see this very much from this point and maybe get a new way of looking into these things and of looking into his motivation.
Yeah, and there's been a fair bit of critique about any given author, including Murray's, ideas, and a lot of it very respectful of his intentions, and then just, you know, putting a lens on it, you know, looking at it from a decolonial lens, looking at it from a lens of, you know, gender equity. There's mm-hmm. all kinds of interesting discourse about, and he would be pleased with most of it, maybe not all, because people are working from his ideas and then taking them further and exploring it and being, using the spirit in which it was written. As you say, it wasn't a scientific in the purest sense of science. It's a type of social science, however, and it's a form of poetry at times. At times, mm-hmm. it's observation, and but it's such important work here in Canada. We refer mm-hmm. to Murray Schafer as a composer, as an educator, as a researcher. And so I'm glad that there people in other countries are interested in his work and bring yet another lens onto it. So I encourage those who read German, I'll put the link in the episode notes, to read your essay and to enjoy the book. And I guess you're here for a number of reasons, but it's interesting to have a conversation now about acoustic ecology, because in this program I talk about my own background mm-hmm. in soundscape studies and you know, I'm trying to connect listening to the theme, which is art and the ecological crisis. So how do you connect listening to the issues that we have around us, such as the climate emergency? But of course, there are many other challenges. Mm-hmm. How do you think listening can help us through these complex mm-hmm. issues?
Yeah, first of all, of course, listening can teach us to appreciate our environment in a critical sense, but also in a kind of admiration for it. And if we admire something because we think it has a depth or it has a beauty or some interesting aspects, we want to keep it, we want to foster it. I think that's an important thing. But then we are a little bit too quick sometimes to identify Murray Schafer's acoustic ecology or acoustic ecology in general with a green listening just to nature. And this is a big critique which comes from many sides, and I can only agree with that. Murray Schafer's term ecology was coined in the 1970s, and it was not necessarily related to natural resources, and it was also not politicized at that time. I don't mind it being politicized now, we have to do that, but at that time it was a bit of a different term, and was a very innovative term. People read ecology and they said, what is ecology? Yeah, and I remember myself when this term came up, it was a big mystery. But the term ecology is very interesting because it comes from the Greek term oikos, and oikos is household. And the Greek household idea was everything in the household is interconnected. The water you have on your premises, the cups or the cutlery you have, the animals, the money, the children, the women, you know, everything, everybody which consisted, which was part of the household. And if one little element of this household changed, the whole system would change. So in this sense, I feel very much has Murray Schafer also used this term, because he asks on a kind of meta level. His question is not, do I appreciate nature or not by listening? His question is, what makes us listen? What exactly is it what coins and forms our habits of listening, but also our objects of listening, our methods of listening? What comes into our foregrounds when we have a special attitude formed by our societies, and what gets in the background? What do we really want to listen to? What do we have to listen to because society imposes it to us? And what do we neglect? So the question, what makes us listen, is, I think, the core of his ecological idea, the idea of a system where many, many factors are interconnected. If you change one factor, the whole thing is changing it in itself. And now adapting this to the question of listening. And I find this is a very promising approach to understand ecology as a broader field, not just as a kind of, you don't have to do this anymore, you don't have to do that anymore, instead you must do this, and you have to be aware of that. Important, of course, but I think this is not all. Just to understand this kind of household idea and this very intricate interconnectedness which it conveys.
And I guess that listening not only raises our awareness, but helps us understand the relationship between the things around us. I agree. You said earlier today, and I just want to ask you, the idea of sound autonomy. You talked a bit about that in conversations. Could you just tell us a bit more about that idea of sound autonomy?
Yeah, auditory autonomy, maybe.
Right,
I think that's also a very important topic in Murray Schafer's work, that sound must not be imposed to us, yeah? And that we should not made listen, you know, that it's not about a system who coins our perception. Of course, every system does so, but then it's very good to become aware of this and to get rid of that and to find your own way of listening. So this is what I understand as a kind of auditory autonomy, listening as an act of freedom, of freeing yourself from what you're coined, what you're interwoven into, and maybe what you are, you're part of an order, and to step out of an order, to recognize it, at the same time to step out of it, of an ordering of sounds, and to say, okay, that's an ordering I'm not so, I'm not the core with. I'd like to have another type of order because I don't find that very visible, or it's overwhelming me, or it doesn't give me peace of mind, or I can't focus on my own ideas anymore. So many reasons, yeah. I think that's an important thing. So I understand this as a kind of sonic autonomy or auditory autonomy. Yeah, not that I just do what I want. Of course, I'm still responsible for my, you know, for the world I'm living in. I can't have an autonomy which bothers other people's autonomies. Yeah, but the autonomy is just to become aware of the factors which coin my listening and which doesn't the factors which don't allow me to have an own approach to my senses and to the way I want to use my senses.
Well, the way I respond to that is choosing not to have certain sounds in our lives or certain electronic presence, like we were talking about our phones and how much attention they take and draw us away from being more in the world. Sometimes they help us be in the world, the microphones, like we're talking now, but more often than not, they're a distraction and we're part of a corporate seduction, you know, trying out to get us to spend more time on Facebook or on social media. So I like that idea of freedom. And of course, the word freedom can be used in so many different ways.
Yes.
Especially here in Ottawa, the word freedom, you know. but I understand what you mean. And it's not that it's new to me, but I find it refreshing to think about that ability to choose and to have some autonomy or some control around what we receive. Now, sometimes with sound, you can't control. If a truck is going by, you can't turn it off, right?
No.
You can electronically and filter it out, but in real life, but you can choose how you relate to that truck. You might go into the truck and say, hey, there's a speed limit here. If you go slower, it's going to... I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do to interact with sounds. I think that's what you mean as well, is relating to them and not being passive. In fact, I'm asking you to
yes.
maybe to clarify further.
Right.
Because I'm
of course, you can
idea.
Do that. You can also see it in a philosophical way, this term of... act of freedom. I think this is a term from the existential philosophy. And freedom, of course, is a very, very complex issue there. Maybe we don't go into that here in this short podcast. But of course, it's also a kind of paradoxical freedom, freedom to do whatever is good for you, but at the same time, not to interfere with the freedom of others. Yeah. And then also, there is this very important saying of Immanuel Kant, I try to translate it into English. Freedom is the insight into necessity. So when a truck is coming and I can't help it, I can, of course, try to understand why it is like that. I think this is what Kant exactly means. He doesn't say, well, then I can't do I can't do anything anymore. He doesn't call for passiveness or something like that. That's not what he means. But I can try to understand that. And if I try why it comes to that, then I can also criticize that. And in the next step, I can take action and can say something has to change. Of course, I as a single person might not be able to change the world. But if people with this kind of critical mind come together, as for example, in the World Forum for Acoustic Ecology, I think they can make an impact, of course. Yeah.
So I think you've answered my question that listening and then collective action through mm-hmm. that listening mm-hmm. is a way to change the world. And, you know, I think about a complex issue like climate change, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. which is affecting all of us. And I think, well, by slowing down, and this is something our colleague Hildegard Westerkamp talks a lot about, is slowing down and paying more attention. It might be meditative or not, but just the mm-hmm. fact of slowing down, allowing the sounds to be received and to be processed, and then there is a sense that there's a power, an untapped power in something as simple as listening. And it's not that listening is simple, but it's easy to do for most mm-hmm. people. Yeah, so that's what I think. And you also teach, right? And I assume these are the kind of things that you work with your students on,
yes,
right?
Yes, right.
It's those skills and
yes.
that history. And
The history, the patience, also the attitude you need when you want to listen. When you want to listen, you have to shut up. I think that's very important because otherwise you can't listen. So take yourself back. I think you have to really, that it's not normal for people to shut up for a while. I don't mean that they have to shut up all the time, but take yourself back and just open your ears. And maybe it's not you who are in the focus at this point. Others are, or the world is, or what's going on around you. And then to take that in, and consciously taking that in, I think this is already a very interesting change of attitude when you talk to people who have not done that before consciously. Yeah. But I think I want to get back to this issue of yours because I know it's important for you. What can art, what can acoustic ecology contribute to the climate crisis and to the ecological issues of our time? And I have thought a lot about that. And of course, there were similar times when people were thinking that there is a kind of very serious situation. And I want to remind of Friedrich Schiller. Friedrich Schiller wrote in 1795, he wrote his treatise about the aesthetic education of mankind. And this is very, very interesting to read. I can really recommend that. That mm-hmm. would be my first recommendation, okay. by the way. And he was facing at this point, at a very early stage, the transformation of society through early industrialism. Industrialization, yeah, and he realized this is a kind of very dehumanizing thing which is going on. So he said, we can save mankind from this alienation and from this frivolity, as he said, and this coarseness which is developing with the people when they get exposed to these kind of very inhuman jobs they have to take. We can try to free them when we educate them aesthetically. Aesthetically means in the arts. If we make them acquainted with what is possible and what other views and expressions are there in the world, so that they not remain only in their really brutal way of life in which they are. So this is a very early answer. 50 years later, Karl Marx came, and he was also talking about the senses. Very, very interesting. Very close to Marie Schaeffer, by the way, or Marie Schaeffer very close to him. Yeah. He was also thinking that the arts can solve things and can make the world really a better place, a more human place. This was very idealistic, and I don't think that it had really worked out that 100%. I think it hasn't, yeah. But I still think it is a starting point. And I thought, well, the arts, or dealing with arts, or being artistically and aesthetically underway as a living being, has one important point in it. This is carefulness, or care. Because an artist is always careful with what she, he, is doing, is always trying to be very careful with expressions, with materials, with symbol languages, whatever, you know. And artists are also addressing the reality in a very, very careful, in a very special way. And I think we can learn from this carefulness when it comes to climate change and ecological issues, because we want to care for something. We care for our environment. We care for the sound it offers to us, or the appearances, the smell it has, or the water which is maybe not good anymore, the resources which are scarce, and so on, the temperatures which are rising. We care. We want to be careful, yeah? In so far, art can really train people to see a strong value in this carefulness. And that would be my answer to this question of yours. We have to develop an aesthetics of care. And when I look, for example, at soundscape composition, there has been a lot of interpretations. What is soundscape composition? What does it have to do with acoustic ecology? Do we really change our minds when we listen to the soundscape composition? Do we change the minds of, you know, that we perceive the world in a different way? Maybe not so much, but what we can say is that these soundscape compositions are nurtured or are made or created by this idea of care. And if we are aware of this, we can really say this kind of aesthetics of care is a very, very good basis for us, because we can say we as artists, we as cultural makers, we as educators, as aesthetic educators or artistic educators, we say that care is our real foundation, because we care for our environment and we care for what's going to happen if we don't change attitudes and so on. So just to express that properly, I think this can change something.
Again, I agree. And I've also seen it in action in concerts and in conferences and in exchanges between artists who are caring about, it could be an issue, it can be a relationship, it can be a relationship to a material. There's so many, but I really like that aesthetic of care. I appreciate that.
Okay, I have written down something about aesthetics of care. Maybe a sentence. It's aesthetics of care is a consciously shaped relationship with the world in a mindful attitude and with high appreciation for the phenomena of this world and its values. So I think that's what an aesthetics of care is about. And yeah, we should look into that, I guess.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to have these words, because words are sometimes difficult to describe something as complex as an aesthetic of care. But when we see it, when we feel it, more importantly, and we hear it, then we know that we've been moved. We know that we have been entered into a space of sensitivity or of connection. And I think that's what the arts do. Some arts are more didactic, you know, there's more in your face and more front-facing, and that's good. And others are much slower processes. And some are not even necessarily considered art. Like, is sound walking an art form?
yes. We can discuss that.
Yeah,
yes,
but it's
course.
A meditative practice. The words escape us, you know. But we do them because they make us feel good. They make us feel connected. And they then, in a way, bring us together because, you know, sound walking, we were talking with Hildegard about it. There's so many ways to sound walk and so many ways to listen and so many ways. But what's interesting in acoustic ecology is that we talk about all of it, sometimes with a critical lens, you know, this could be better, that could be better, but mostly with a generosity. Mm-hmm. I remember talking to Hildy about that 1993 conference, and you were there, and Pauline Oliveros was there, and Schaefer, and so many people. Mm-hmm. And what Hildy said is that this is a community that's generous. Mm-hmm. They are kind to each other because of this notion of listening, and it's so broad. Mm-hmm. It's so open-ended that there isn't this sense of competition. It's just, how can you contribute to listening, to a better acoustic ecology, to whatever aspect of it. And there's so many interesting research going on now about aspects, you know, social justice and listening. So I'm just fascinated to see all of these things unfolding. And the fact that you're educating young people and helping them find voice in the world and using the tools of Schaefer and others and then making it their own. Like, how can they own their own language about listening and acoustic ecology anyway.
But then care is, again, now I'm talking in another language. Of course, the term care in English means a bit something different. So I would say in German, Ästhetik der Sorgfalt oder der Sorge. Yeah, of course, this is also care, but then you have to be a bit careful about care because care can also point into the direction of disempowering or oppressive or
control.
Yes, and this is, of course, not the care I would like to point to, yeah, but something which means I'm sorgfältig, I'm careful. Yeah, I really want to not to go over it quickly, but I really want to take a good look, a long listen to it, and in order not to miss points and in order not to ignore things. Yeah,
I hear you. So to end, do you have any? Now you've already talked about the Schiller book or a quote, and I'll make that. Is there anything else you'd like to recommend to our listeners?
Yes, there is an interesting book. It's by Yuriko Saito. It's called Aesthetics of Care. It's in English. I think it is something to be discussed in a critical way, but also in a very inspiring way.
Well, we'll leave it at that, Sabina Breitsemeter. I really appreciate your taking the time to speak with me, and I'm sure we will talk again.
Thank you.